You know what those bells mean, right? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? I just said, you know what those bells mean? It's time to start our Easter mission called Igniting the Light of Christ Within You. My name is Paul Kolesky, and I thank you for coming out. And in the next 90 minutes, you're going to hear a presentation entitled Connecting with the Light of Christ. I'm going to cover a few different things. First of all, the conversion experience that I had. I'm going to call it a reconversion because I was already Catholic, but I'm going to cover that when I challenged God and said, prove to me the Catholic faith is a true faith. Then we're going to talk about the miracle of the true presence of Jesus at Mass. And in a very neat way, I'm going to share an article with you on the Mass itself and what one soul was allowed to see that happens supernaturally at every Mass. Father, I think you're going to be particularly excited when you hear about part of that. Finally, we're going to end talking about the miracle of you and how God's designed you and called you to be a prophet to the nations. But before I begin with our session, I'm going to read our opening prayer. This comes from the prayer card sets that I have on the back of my merchandise table. I have used these since age 23 to help recondition my thinking from fear, doubt, worry, and anxiety to one of peace and purpose and promise due to deep spiritual thoughts and beliefs. This first one is called Tuesday's Prayer. For best effect, I suggest that you close your eyes to remove distraction and let the words sink in. I am guided in love today and every day. As I begin this day, I look to you, Lord. Keep me in all my ways, safe in your presence, enfolded in your love. Guide my feet in the way they should go. Instruct me with your still, small voice. Help me to be faithful to your guidance. Help me to be calm, unwavering, and steadfast in the knowledge that you are in charge and nothing but good can come to me and mine. Love me, Lord, just for today. I know that you are with me today, supplying all my needs, tenderly upholding me. Today I walk with you and you lead me irresistibly to the good you have already prepared for me. Whatever I need to do today, be with me, Lord. Wherever I need to go, guide my steps, Lord. Keep me safe and secure through every moment of the day. Fill me with your wisdom. Enfold me in your love. Strengthen me with your power. And from Numbers we hear, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. It was October 3rd. 1990. And I was at my home in Wisconsin when I got a call with a very shaky voice on the other end of it. It was the voice of my father asking me to come over to my childhood residence. When I turned the last turn to get there, I broke into tears. Walked up the walk, and there was Dad when I opened the door, sitting in his favorite chair. The chair where he watched Walter Cronkite deliver the news night after night. The chair where he watched Archie Bunker pontificate to Edith. Remember that? And the same chair where he had my brother on one knee and me on another knee. We were little boys on Sunday afternoons after Mass and after a nice Sunday noon meal. He taught us about football and the Green Bay Packers. I didn't say a word. I knelt down and I threw my arms around my dad, and we both cried like babies. You see, Dad had been preparing the last couple months now for surgery, a very simple surgery, but he was extremely anxious about it and couldn't find any peace. Today, that day, he called me over at 2 in the afternoon. Sometimes he'd call me at 2 in the morning, and I would be his inspirational guy. When the crying was done, Dad asked me to take his chair He said, I have a few things to say to you, son. And he proceeded to pace around the living room like a televangelist in his pajamas that afternoon. And here's what he said. He said, son, I called you over to the house today to tell you that I'm going to die. I said, wait a minute, Dad. You're getting way too anxious about this surgery. It's easy surgery. You had 3 heart valves totally replaced 10 years ago, and look at you. You're still going. He goes, no, the heart didn't start right away after that surgery. It took him 2-3 times. Then I had that car accident. Remember? I should have died there. I just don't think I'm going to cheat death a third time, which is why I called you over, son. I called you over here to tell you that I'm ready. I feel really good about the state of my soul because I've been a good practicing Catholic my entire life. And I got to thinking about you, son. I got to thinking about you someday on your deathbed. And to tell you something, son, I don't like your chances. He said, I haven't been seeing you at Mass. What's happened to you? What type of spiritual belief system are you in now? I hear you talking funny about God and spirituality. He said, you're dogging it, son, when it comes to your practice of the Catholic faith, and that's not how I brought you up. He said, when Jesus came to this earth to fix it, there was no other Christian faith for 1,500 years until Martin Luther nailed his grievances to the door, and the split began and continued ever since. He said, there's a magic in the Catholic faith if you really look at it and apply it. He said, have you forgotten? Have you forgotten that the bread on the altar, once consecrated, isn't bread, it becomes the body of Christ? And the same with the wine, when once it's consecrated, becomes the blood of Christ. He caught me. I started to do what so many Catholics have done, and I thought of it as a symbol. I forgot about the true presence. And then he said, you know what? A lot of people that do what you do, leave the church, they don't think it's important that they confess their sins to a priest. They think, well, I can go to God. Here's the problem with that, son. When you go to God, it can be your own consciousness, your awareness, and it can be dimmer and dimmer and dimmer, and basically you let yourself get away with more and more and more. It's not the priest you're confessing to. Through apostolic succession, the laying on of hands, which happened after Jesus arose from the dead, started there, he said, the priest is in persona Christi. It's Christ that you're confessing to. And he'll let you know when you need a little correction. Don't ever underestimate that beautiful sacrament to cleanse your soul. And he said, the Mass is the most perfect prayer. Don't ever forget that. Now, son, would you make me a promise? What's that, Dad? Would you give the Catholic faith another try once I'm gone? I said, Dad, I don't think you're going to die, but if you do, would you make me a promise that you'll get me help? Because in my bouncing around from this feel-good church to that feel-good church to this belief system, I haven't found what I'm looking for. I'm still aching to feel that connection that with Christ. I want to feel him more. And I haven't found it. He said, son, if I can get you help, I will. And 10 days later, after simple surgery, he bled to death and died. It was a week or so after the funeral, and Mom was ironing that afternoon. I went over to the house to visit her, my childhood home. She was ironing some of Dad's clothes for the last time. She said, it was really tough that day I took your father to the hospital. When we backed out of the driveway, he looked at the house, and here's what he said. Goodbye, house. And she said, what are you talking about? He said, Joe, short for Josephine, I'm not coming back. What are you going to do about me or without me after I'm gone? She said, I'm going to sit on the couch, and I'm going to look at that last nice photograph we had taken for the 125th anniversary of our parish for the photo album. And he said, that's your plan? That's what you're going to do? She said, yep. And she said, that's what I've done, Paul. And at night, I could see the frame illuminating. The wooden frame is lighting up at night around our picture. The same thing is happening above my bed, my parents' room. I think Dad's trying to communicate. In August of that year, 2 months before he died, I was over at the house on a Saturday, and he read to me a letter he composed to my sister Carolyn. And he said to me, I don't remember your sister from age 5 on. I got so busy, caught up in the workaday world, I became a workaholic, trying to escape the poverty cycle on the farm. He was one of 13 kids. So he wrote her a letter, and he read it to me, and he cried. Well, it was Carolyn who was sitting in my dad's favorite chair, his favorite night of the year, Christmas Eve. The first Christmas Eve, he wasn't there. And about 10:30, she said, in through the drawn drapes, came an oval of blue and white light, hovered in front of the Christmas tree, and it sat in her lap as she sat in my dad's favorite chair. It went back up in front of the Christmas tree, and zipped right out through the drawn drapes. On Christmas night, my sister Claudia was there. And Carolyn said to her, as she was preparing to go home, would you stay with me a little longer? Because something kind of strange happened about this time last night. I'd just like you to stay. And at about the same time, in through the drawn drapes, with Carolyn in my dad's favorite chair, and Claudia over here in what became known as my mom's favorite chair, this oval of blue and white light came. It went in between the two girls, and then it hovered in front of that picture. My sister Claudia had a big, said it's like the picture had a big smile on my dad's face. She said it was unmistakable. The oval of blue and white light hovered between the two and went right out through the drawn drapes. The following year, I had decided to make a change in my employment, and I answered a mail piece that came to me. I went in for an interview to become what I thought was just an associate with a startup insurance and investment company that an investment banker in downtown Milwaukee was putting together. And when the people interviewed me, there were three partners. I didn't know they were looking for a fourth, and then there was the investment banker. I had so much background, Fortune 100 sales training and all this stuff, they not only brought me on board, but they turned me into the president of this new startup venture. Every day we made a habit, us four partners, of going to lunch at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to escape the noontime crowds downtown Milwaukee. Little calmer than New Orleans, but busy, I'm sure, as you would think. Every day, one of the partners would disappear at 11:45. And he would show up at 12:45 and then go to lunch with us. He had a vital part as one of the partners in our niche market that we had, and we were doing very well. And finally, I called him into my office, and I said to him, Kevin, where are you disappearing to every day? You're gone for an hour before lunch, and then you take an hour lunch break with us. People are starting to talk. It's not fair. Oh, he said, I'm going to Mass on Broadway, Old St. Mary's on Broadway, downtown Milwaukee, and I walked there because I don't want to deal with downtown parking. We've got free parking here at our hotel, the Pfister Hotel, famous hotel. I said, Kevin, what are you doing? He said, well, I say a rosary there, I go to Mass, and then I walk back and I get another rosary in. I said, Mass? I said, you can't go to Mass. It's Tuesday. And he looked at me and he said, remember, he's 6'2", 6'3". He's a black belt in four different martial arts. And he's looking down at me saying, I go to Mass every day. Nobody interferes with me going to Mass. I went to Medjugorje, and I had a tremendous conversion experience. And he pulled a rosary, a big rosary, out of his pocket where the chain links connecting the beads had been silver. Now they were gold. And he looked at me and he said, "Didn't you know there's nothing more important than the Catholic Mass?" He said, "I know you're Catholic because I've heard you make reference to it." He goes, "You've got a bad attitude about the Catholic faith. I'm going to pray for you." Well, I got to tell you something. What I didn't tell you is that I wanted to be a rock star. And I had a chance to sign a contract when I was 20 years old, which was 11 years before this story took place. I never did for a variety of reasons. I couldn't believe I didn't do it. And when I was age 22, I was in the confessional at a neighboring parish. Why? Father, I didn't want to go to my own pastor. Did you ever do that? A lot of heads don't. He's not looking. Pretend you're behind the screen. And I went there, and I was complaining to the priest at age 22 about the Catholic faith. And he said, "You've got an extremely strong spirit, but a bad attitude about the Catholic faith." He goes, "You've got to get it right." I said, "Father, I want to meet you." He said, "When?" I said, "Right now." I was behind the screen, so I opened my door, he opened his. We shook hands and agreed to meet the next Saturday night. You should have seen the look on the faces of the people waiting to go to confession. I could just hear a guy, "Mary, if I've got to do that for my penance, I'm leaving now," when he closes the door. The next Saturday night, for 3 hours, he listened to all my excuses, my apparent reasons about why the faith wasn't valid, and he shredded me. I got answers I never heard before. The church wasn't as good then about saying, "Here's what we've got." Unbelievably, several years later, in his 30s, he died as a very young priest, unexpectedly. Changed my life. So here it was. I was in this business, and my friend Kevin walked into my office about 5 weeks later after our meeting. And he said, "I'm leaving the business." I said, "Why? We've all got 100,000 shares of stock, a stockbroker that knows how to make that public. Things are looking great." He said, "Something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but I'm out. I'm going to go back," because he was commuting from the Twin Cities 4 days a week. 5 months later, I found out what happened. We had an investment type come in, join our business, do an audit. He was a CPA, and he found out that the investment banker was keeping two sets of books. The trust was gone. I left the business, so did another partner, leaving only one behind. And I was more upset, not about losing the opportunity, but about that my Catholic partner, Kevin, knew before I did. I claimed to have such a good connection with God. I thought I should know. It bothered me. I started to go back to Mass. I was sitting at my church, and the music director, Thomas, said to me after Mass, "I think you ought to be a cantor." And I said, "Okay, I'll give it a try. I could sing a little bit." And I became a cantor. For 5 years, I loved it. After only 1 year of being a cantor, my pastor tapped me on the shoulder after one of the Masses and said, "Can you do me a favor? How'd you like to run for parish council?" I said, "No." Here's what I was thinking. I didn't tell him this. I haven't made my first million yet. That business deal that didn't work through has left me wondering, what am I going to do to support my family? I don't have any gray hair. My attitude was, when you get older and you've hopefully got your life figured out, that's when you serve the parish in that capacity. Because in my parish, that's the way it was. Everyone that was on council, the pillars of the faith, were all older. My dad had been on council. And I just didn't think I had the time. I really didn't think I had the time. He said, "Paul, I just need one more person to fill out the ballot." So I agreed. Guess what? I got the most votes, 585. And my third year of being on the parish council, they elected me as president or chairman. which was the same spot my dad had about 10 years earlier. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I wondered, how could I have said no to my pastor, which means I'm saying no to God? I'm glad I said yes. In the third year on my council, my pastor called me at home one night with one more request. He said, Paul, I'd like you to come to a meeting next week on evangelization in the Catholic Church. I said, I can't come. He said, why not? I said, because everybody knows Catholics don't evangelize. What would we talk about? There's no discussion to be had. He said, that's exactly what the meeting's about. The bishops have worked for 5 years, United States bishops, and put together a plan to build this church back. And besides, you're on parish council. You know, you ought to know what's going on. And I think it's right up your alley. So I went. And more than half of the about 10 people there were in my dad's 8th grade graduating class. I felt those goosebump feelings. Because these are people that I saw in church at Mass since I was a little boy at St. Joseph's in Racine, Wisconsin. I now got to hear their stories of why they were Catholic. The healings, the miracles, the faith stories were unbelievable. Everything that I was looking for and complaining in the confessional to the priest when I was 22. They even told me a funny story about my dad. They said in 4th grade he misbehaved. And when Sister Jean got the kids out in the hall lined up for dismissal, she told my dad, you need to stay back for misbehaving. And you're not going to be able to walk home to the farm, about 3 miles or so, until you write the Roman numerals from 1 to 1500. Sister went out the door with the kids. My dad went out the window. It's not a full story to this day. It was interesting because then Father asked me back to the meeting, the evangelization meeting, what do you think about the bishop's plan after the presentation? I said, Father, there's something missing. And he said, you're the one that said Catholics don't evangelize. How would you know what's missing? I said, Father, I got a marketing major in college. What's missing is me. This plan is everything the Catholic Church needs to do, in my humble opinion, to get the word out. The Catholic Church hasn't marketed itself well, and they've lost people like me. People they need. I said, I'm in. I'm what's missing in the church. I want to help. And that night we agreed to start a committee. I was co-chairperson with another person, and the most important thing we did was reinstitute the practice of Eucharistic adoration, which had been dormant in my parish for 25 years. October that year, I was asked to go on a pilgrimage to Conyers, Georgia, a very controversial place. And I said, yes, I'm going to go because I've got a question for God. I boarded a bus on December 11th, 1993, and 17 hours later, on December 12th, the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, I jumped off the bus in Conyers. And there were hundreds of chairs set up on a hill around what looked like a log cabin type structure, a little ways up a hill, where allegedly the church never approved it, but the church allows me to talk about it because it's a private revelation. I'm allowed to do that. I walked in where allegedly Mary would appear and speak to this woman on the 13th of every month. I couldn't verify it, but I felt a calling to go. I walked into the room. There was a wicker basket, paper and pencils, and here's what I did. I picked them up and I wrote a note to God. I said, Dear God, I believe in you, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, greatest story ever told, but I don't know if the Catholic faith is the true faith. Give me a sign. I got my dad's rosary when he died. I said, turn this rosary, turn it from silver to gold, the chain links, just like Kevin's in number. Of people I had seen that had gone to Medjugorje. Here's what I said, like Thomas, then I'll believe. If you do that for me, I'll tell everyone I can that the Catholic faith is the true faith, and they ought to be in it. Mind you, I had quit playing guitar for 5 years, if you can believe that. So I thought I would be a speaker. I folded up the note, said, "To our fathers, 2 Hail Marys, and 2 Glory Bes. I dropped it in a basket, and I took a walk back. I was there when a family handed me their Polaroid film camera and said, "Please take a picture of us in front of this statue of Mary." I snapped the photo, and as we watched the film develop, there was the family, there was the statue, and the Blessed Mother's face appeared miraculously in the picture. I walked on my own and looked up to see a spinning sun. It was stationary. You know when Father holds the entire full host up during consecration? It looked like someone had placed a host or a disc over the sun, and you could only see the edges of sunlight. It made the impression that the sun was spinning, but it was stationary. To the left of the sun, there was a large rectangle rainbow. I had never seen one of those before. And to the right of the sun, there appeared 3 white crosses made out of the clouds, with the middle one elevated above the other 2. I figured, that's unbelievable. How could a jet make those? But a jet didn't make those. It was the clouds that actually formed the crosses, with the one in the middle elevated. I looked up at the spinning sun, and very quickly, as I stared with this left eye, this one was closed, I made a telescope out of my naked eye, looked up at the sun, and from shoulders on up, a veiled feminine face appeared. It was like a marble type statue, just from shoulders on up, and disappeared as quickly as it appeared. I instinctively said, "Blessed Mother, please excuse my unbelief, but if that was you, please allow me to see it again." When you stare at the sun and look away, you know what it does. You see blotches, dark blotches usually. So she reappeared. Then colors started to form around the sun, and Mary appeared in her navy blue mantle, the most stunning view I had ever seen of her, standing in front of the sun with her arms outstretched from head to toe, just like this. She disappeared, and without me asking this time, reappeared. There were incredible feelings that I had, but most of it was feeling like I was frozen in time. A little bit later on, as I looked into the southern sky that afternoon, I saw a slender 35-foot-tall statue or vision or hologram or apparition of the Blessed Mother, just like a statue you'd see in church. But imagine it 35 feet tall, all in bronze, holding baby Jesus in her left arm, with the sun sparkling off the 2 of them. They disappeared. When I noticed that it had disappeared, Mary reappeared, and this time her arms were empty, and there was Jesus that was elevated as he appeared as a grown man to her left, all in bronze. Jesus disappeared, Mary disappeared, Mary reappeared, Jesus appeared again to her left, elevated, and then St. Joseph appeared, the same level as the Blessed Mother, with Jesus in the middle. All of them were like this, all in bronze. I couldn't believe it. Talk about time freezing. I can't tell you how long it even was there for. But I had a healthy fear of God at that point, because I instinctively felt if I could see those 3, remember my prayer? I believe in you, Jesus, Mary, Joseph. I instantly felt that the tenets of the Catholic faith, I didn't feel it, I knew it. They were true. And then I got a healthy fear of God because I wondered about the state of my soul. I walked back over to the sun. It was spinning again. And what I did at that point was I looked up. It looked like someone had cut the middle out of it, just sliced it in half, and the colors began to pour out of the rainbow, one by one by one. And then in front of the sun appeared a long-stemmed rose about 70 feet tall. It disappeared and came back. I was tapped on the shoulder by one of the organizers of the trip. She said, it's the hour of divine mercy. 3 o'clock, we need to get over to the cross where pilgrims are praying what's called the Chaplet of Unity. As I stood around the cross, something even greater was to happen. It was nothing that I would see. It's what I would feel. As they prayed and I stared at the cross adoring a beautiful body of Jesus, I wept. My coat was soaked. I felt as if someone had opened up my chest, as if for heart surgery, and taken one of those power sprayers that you clean the cement or the deck with, and my soul felt like it was cleansed. Better than the best absolution from the best confession. I felt pure, peaceful, and holy at the same time. I never remembered the three of those in such a depth happening to me, even on my confirmation day, which was a huge day for me. I remember it like it was yesterday. I knew that I was back in the Catholic faith for keeps, even though I had been active, but I felt it in my bones. And I had no idea that that was the genesis of my ministry. Because when I went home a few days later, here's the song that I was compelled to write at 20 minutes to midnight when I couldn't sleep. It was done by 20 minutes after midnight. 40 minutes, this song was composed.
I just took a journey. Faith was calling me. It happened just a dozen days before our Christmas Eve in the year of 1993. I went to a sacred place for what was said to be a modern day expression of a mother's love for me. Not knowing what would happen after petitioning and prayer, that I would see our Blessed Mother there. I saw Mary, she came out from a spinning sun. She appeared holding Jesus, silently saying, he's the only one. She had one great message that turned into a plea. She asked for prayers to set her children free. Now people, did you hear me? This thing that I just said, I saw our Blessed Mother and the miracle of roses red. Then I cried and bowed my head, because I saw Mary, she came out from a spinning sun. She appeared holding Jesus, silently saying, he's the only one. She had one great message that turned into a plea. She asked for prayers to set her children free. These times that we are living in, so many have forgotten God. History repeats itself. In the Bible, this path has been trod. But soon the day is coming, unlike anyone before, when we will see the face of Christ the Lord. I saw Mary, she came out from a spinning sun. Then she appeared holding Jesus, silently saying, He's the only one. She had one great message that turned into a plea. She asked for prayers to set her children free. She asked for prayers to set us, her children, free. For us to answer Mary and set us, her children, free. Please take the time. Please make the time. Please take the time each day to pray. Now, just in case you're wondering if this story sung is really true, just remember that the Holy Spirit uses many ways to talk to you. I saw Mary.
It took me about 18 months to feel like my feet were back on the ground. I couldn't relate to the world as I knew it because I knew that en masse, the world was in trouble, and perhaps I was too. When I saw Mary and Joseph and Jesus, and when he was elevated above the two of them, it just told me everything I needed to know. The faith indeed was true. I felt it. The song was unbelievable that I would even write a song after quitting guitar, giving up on it. Jesus gave us everything we needed. The scriptures are alive and as lively today as they ever were. They keep repeating themselves. You find yourselves in the stories from time to time? The examples he gave us, if we can model our lives after that, well, if the whole world did it, there'd be peace. And what our faith guarantees us, if we practice what it teaches, we're guaranteed eternal life. Jesus' miracles that happened in his ministry have never ended. They continue to this day. And that's why I'm going to move to the middle part of our presentation today, the miracle of transubstantiation, the true presence of Christ at each Mass. Everywhere in the world. One day in the year 700, which was in the 8th century, a Basilian monk who was very wise in the ways of the world, but not in matters of faith, was saying Mass. He had such doubts in the true presence of Christ at Mass that he almost lost his vocation over it. It was in Lanciano, Italy. Here's what he said during the consecration. O fortunate witnesses to whom the blessed God, to confound my unbelief, has wished to reveal himself in this most blessed sacrament and to render himself visible to our eyes. Come, brethren, marvel at our God so close to us. Behold the flesh and blood of our most beloved Christ. Now, this miracle that occurred in the year 700 was just the beginning. It's still ongoing. The host flesh can be very distinctly observed there today, as both specimens are still present in something called a reliquary there in the church where it happened. How many of you have been to that church in Lanciano, Italy? Anyone? One? Okay, I meet a few people that have been there. Here's something even more amazing. The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is really and totally present in either the whole consecrated host or a fragment of it. And the same applies for the consecrated wine, which, once consecrated, becomes the blood of Christ. Listen to this. The five globules that are contained in the reliquary there, when they are weighed either separately or together, it totals the same weight.
15.85 grams. It verifies what the church teaches. In 1970 and 71, a scientific investigation took place, and here's what was found. The flesh is real flesh. The blood is real blood, and they belong to the human species. The flesh consists of the muscular tissue of the heart. The flesh and blood have the same blood type, type AB, which is exactly what was found in the Holy Shroud of Turin. In the blood, there are normal proteins and minerals necessary to sustain healthy human life. And the preservation of the flesh and blood were left in their normal state for 12 centuries, even though they got exposed to atmospheric and biological agents. And to this day, it remains an extraordinary phenomenon. The next article comes to us from a church-approved, one of the 171 Catholic Church-approved Eucharistic miracles from Buenos Aires, Argentina, a little bit more modern-day one. The preface is this: the weakening of the faith in the real presence of the risen Christ in the Eucharist is one of the most significant aspects of the current spiritual crisis in the Catholic Church. Jesus wants to strengthen our faith in his Eucharistic presence. So from time to time, he gives us signs, Eucharistic miracles, that clearly underscore the fact that he, the risen Lord himself, in the mystery of his divinity and glorified humanity, is truly present in the Eucharist. The most recent miracle recognized by church authorities occurred in 1996 in Buenos Aires, Argentina. At 7 o'clock one evening, August 18, 1996, a Father Alejandro Pezet was saying Mass in the commercial center of a church in Buenos Aires. After finishing distributing Holy Communion, a woman came up to him to tell him that she had found a discarded host on a candle holder at the back of church. Father went to the spot indicated and saw that the host was defiled. He was unable to consume it, so he placed it in a container of water and put it away in the tabernacle of the Chapel of the Blessed Sacrament. On Monday, August 26th, upon opening the tabernacle, he saw to his amazement that the host had turned into a bloody substance. He informed Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio, who is now Pope Francis, who gave instructions that the host be professionally photographed. The photos were taken on September 6th. They clearly show the host had become a fragment of bloodied flesh, grown significantly in size. And for several years, the host remained in the tabernacle. This was all kept a strict secret. And since the host never suffered any visible decomposition, Cardinal Bergoglio decided to have it scientifically analyzed. So on October 5th, 1999, in the presence of his representatives, they took a sample of it and sent it to New York for analysis. They didn't want to prejudice the study, so they didn't tell the cardiologist, a forensic pathologist, Dr. Frederick Zugabe, they didn't tell him where they got the sample. He analyzed the material, and here's what he said. It's a fragment of the heart muscle found in the wall of the left ventricle close to the valves. He said the heart muscle is in an inflamed condition, and it contains a large number of white blood cells. This indicates to me that the heart was alive at the time this sample was taken. It's my contention that the heart was alive, since white blood cells die outside of a living organism. They require a living organism to sustain them. These white blood cells, he continued, had penetrated the tissue, which further indicates that the heart had been under severe stress, as if the owner had been beaten severely about the chest. How many of you have heard of either one of these two Eucharistic miracles? About 30% of you. Of those of you who have heard about it, how many of you have shared the articles with someone else? About a third of those that saw it. Okay. This next article has an imprimatur on it from the Archbishop of Bolivia. I can use it in the church because of his imprimatur. Otherwise, I would not, because I've heard some amazing stories, seen some amazing things. I've been to churches where there's been Eucharistic miracles you'll never hear about. Never. Amazing. What I've been allowed to see across the United States, thank God, helps me deal with the travel because my faith is bolstered all the time. There's a lady by the name of Catalina Rivas from Colcochambia, Bolivia. When I was giving a parish mission many years ago in Honolulu, Hawaii, I met someone who is in the choir at her parish and says, I know about her and everything. It's really great. And her archbishop says she is authentically receiving messages. There are a few gifted souls in our faith. She's receiving messages from Jesus, Mary, and the angels. And he said, so it's okay for her to talk and share for what she's been given to share. Well, the Blessed Mother said to her one day, I'm going to show you what happens at Mass that people can't see with their eyes. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to imagine yourself. First of all, close your eyes. It's best if you close your eyes. And I want you to imagine yourself at the point that you sit in church, at your favorite Mass, your favorite seat, and then imagine that it's offertory. And I'll pick up this article from the offertory time of the Mass. Suddenly, some characters whom I had not seen before began to stand up. It was as if from the side of each person present in the cathedral, another person emerged, and soon the cathedral became full of young, beautiful people. They were dressed in very white robes, and they started to move into the central aisle and then went out toward the altar. The Blessed Mother said, observe, they are the guardian angels of each one of the persons who are here. This is the moment in which your guardian angel carries your offerings and petitions before the altar of the Lord. At that moment, I was completely astonished because these beings had such beautiful faces, so radiant as one was unable to imagine. Their countenance was very beautiful with almost feminine faces. However, the structure of their body, their hands, their height were masculine. Their naked feet did not touch the floor, but rather they went as if gliding, and the procession was very beautiful. Some of them were carrying something like a golden bowl with something that shone a great deal with a golden white light. The Virgin Mary said, they are the guardian angels of the people who are offering this holy Mass for many intentions, those who are conscious of what this celebration means. They have something to offer the Lord. Offer yourselves at this moment. Offer your sorrows, your pains, your hopes, your sadness, your joys, and your petitions. And remember, the Mass has infinite value. Behind the first angels came others who had nothing in their hands. They were coming empty-handed. The Virgin Mary said, those are the angels of the people who are here, but never offer anything. They have no interest in living each liturgical moment of the Mass, and they have no gifts to carry before the altar of the Lord. At the end of the procession came other angels who were rather sad, but with their eyes joined in prayer, and their eyes were downcast. These are the guardian angels of the people who are here, but who do not want to be. That is to say, of the people who have been forced to come here, who have come out of obligation, but without any desire to participate in the Holy Mass. The angels go forth sadly because they have nothing to carry to the altar except for their own prayers. Do not sadden your guardian angel. Ask for much, for the conversion of sinners, peace in the world. Pray for your families and your neighbors, and especially for those who ask for your prayers. Now it was time for consecration, and it was the Archbishop who was saying Mass. As he said the words of consecration, he, being a person of normal height, suddenly began to grow, becoming filled with light. A supernatural light between white and gold enveloped him and grew very strong about the face. Because of it, I could not see his features. When he raised the host, I saw his hands, and on the back of his hands he had some marks, from which emanated a great deal of light. It was Jesus. It was him who was wrapping his body around the celebrant as if he were lovingly surrounding the hands of the archbishop. At that moment, the host began to grow and became filled with light. It was enormous, and upon it, the marvelous face of Jesus appeared, looking at the people. Suddenly, suspended in the air, I saw Jesus crucified. I saw him from the head to the lower part of the chest. The cross beam of the cross was sustained by some large, strong hands. From within this resplendent light, a small light, like a very brilliant, very small dove, came forth and flew swiftly all over the church. It came to rest on the left shoulder of the archbishop, who continued to appear as Jesus, because I could distinguish his long hair, his luminous wounds, but I could not see his face. Above was Jesus crucified, his head fallen upon his right shoulder. I was able to contemplate his face, beaten arms, and torn flesh. On the right side of his chest, he had an injury, and blood was gushing out toward the left side and the right side. It looked like water, but it was very brilliant. It was more like jets of light coming forth toward the faithful and moving to the right and to the left. I was amazed at the amount of blood that was flowing out toward the chalice. I thought it would overflow and stain the whole altar, but not a single drop was spilled. At that moment, the Virgin Mary said, "This is the miracle of miracles. I have said to you before that the Lord is not constrained by time and space. At the moment of the consecration, all the assembly is taken to the foot of Calvary at the instant of the crucifixion of Jesus." That same thing that happened to the priest in that article happens to your pastor at each and every Mass. Father, not only do I thank you for your vocation, but I thank you for bringing us the perfect prayer of the Mass. It was a priest in California, the first one to bring me in there 9 years ago, that suggested, prophesied, if you will, that I was going to write this song that talks about my love, and I'm sure you'll agree it's appropriate at this point in our mission. It talks about Christ. It's called Heartfelt. I fully believe in the mystery of your awesome majesty. You entered my life, then you took me over, oh so completely. Revealing a way to live and love and move from day to day. With all that said, I need to take some time right now just to say, oh Jesus, my love is heartfelt. My love is heartfelt. And every time I think of you, the love inside builds us so true. Then I wonder about that fateful day when I get to meet you, Jesus, and say, my love is heartfelt. Broken world doesn't yield the things we need to live and die with you. Yesterday's gone, but the memories still live on in my mind. But you ease the pain and then remain to be the balm that heals in time. Cause you promised you'd always be right here beside me. My love is heartfelt. My
inside of his heart felt. Ooh. And every time I think of you, the love inside feels oh so true. Then I wonder about that fateful day when I get to meet you, Jesus, and say. You ever think about it? My love is heartfelt. Jesus, Lord, I pray, envelop me today. To you, my Lord and King, adoration I do bring. God, you gave your Son so we could say we won. Make the Spirit in us grow so that we may always know. My love is heartfelt. My love is heartfelt. Ooh.
I'm going to ask all of you to stand up for a moment at your seats. You know, as Catholics, we're used to some calisthenics at Mass, aren't we? It's tough for us to sit for as long as you've already been sitting. Let's see if I hit the right button. Can you hear me? Can you hear it? All right.
Is it picking up? Okay, there we go. People ask me a question, did your rosary ever change? No, it never did. But the next day, there were people next to me who every other chain link changed from silver to gold. Would skip one, go to the next. It was amazing. If you think about the whole story, what my dad told me, the miracle I said happened to me, who was I to deserve that, especially doubting like I did and leaving the faith? How did that happen? Two words, grace and mercy. It's the only thing that would explain it. So it's kind of my way of paying back and keeping my promise. Now, we're going to get into a very important segment as our mission enters its last phase this afternoon. It's called the miracle of you. So maybe we should go to our left. Maybe we should turn a bit to our right. And maybe we should bend backwards. This is all to wake you up. And maybe forwards, not too far forward. I've seen people stumble and fall right over the pew. Okay? And maybe take a deep breath. Now let's sit back down as we get into the miracle of you. In Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, here's what we hear. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I have appointed you a prophet to the nations. How many of you, by raising of hand like you did before, think about yourself as an actual prophet to the nations? Put your hands up. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven out of easily 60 plus people, maybe 70. The others of you don't think of yourselves that way. So, being from Wisconsin and a dreaded Packer fan, I think I phrased the whole question wrong and I framed it out wrong. So, let's just stop there. How many of you have seen the Olympics over the last several years, especially the opening ceremonies. To me, it's as great as the whole Olympics, almost. And have you ever noticed when there was only one person representing an entire nation who gets to carry the flag in the opening ceremonies? It's that person representing the whole nation. But how about Scripture? How many sheep did Jesus leave in this zip code, we'll call it New Orleans, uptown, to go minister to one over here? I can't even say some of the names down here of your cities. I'll say the one I'm most familiar with, Houma. Houma. How do you say it? Houma? All right, so Jesus left how many sheep over there in uptown New Orleans to go minister to one in Houma? How many did he leave over there? 99. Of course, they didn't have the same zip codes and cities in the Bible, but you get my point. So let me ask you this question. What's the value of one soul? A lot. Haven't heard that one in a while. Is priceless okay? Is infinite right? Infinite value. It's said that all of heaven rejoices when one soul comes back to the faith, goes to heaven. So one soul has infinite value. So let's run back over here to uptown, New Orleans. What's the value of 99 souls? It's infinite. It's the same as one. It's not any greater. That's why Jesus took the time out and went to minister to just one soul. So being from Wisconsin, I have to rephrase the question about you being a prophet. Let me ask it this way. How many of you are godparents? Keep your hands up. How many of you are also confirmation sponsors? If you're a godparent and a confirmation sponsor, keep your hand up. Either one or both. Okay. Let me take you back to baptism day. Father, you said it at the opening of Mass. You talked about renewing our, you know, the sprinkling rite that you did, and thinking back to when Christ was ignited in us in our baptism. I think you said something like that. On the day that your godson or goddaughter was baptized, did you, as godparent, or did you not say, when the priest asked you, now, if for any reason this kid is not attended to in the matters of the faith, will you see to it that that happens? Of course you did. You made a commitment during that sacrament to in persona Christi, that priest guy, in front of God. You took a vow. Now, question. That day, you were anointed as a prophet to that one soul, which is infinite value, as many as 99, same value as a whole nation. When is the last time that you talked to that soul about their practice of the Catholic faith? It's kind of a sobering thought. Well, you don't understand, Paul. This is 2018. And a couple of members of my family have left the Catholic Church, so if I bring it up at Thanksgiving or Christmas or when we're getting together in the summer for a nice picnic, it creates such a stir, I'd rather hit a hornet's nest with a bat. So what? Is God more important? Is the value of that soul any less because there's been a rift regarding the faith in the relations? You see, we just don't want to deal with it in this modern era because we either fall into, well, I don't want to be politically incorrect, which is absolutely absurd, when there's nothing more important than you on your deathbed and the state of your soul. If that godson or goddaughter doesn't hear it from you, who in this crazy world of ours is going to tell them? Most of the people that have left the church are hanging out with people who have left the church or have never been in it. So their chances without you are slimmer than they are with you. Does that make sense? This is precisely one of the areas where I feel guided to say to Catholics that we need to get our thinking right. We're not exuberant enough about our faith to talk about it in spite of anything. Let's talk about the people who have talked about it and have been rebuffed time and time again. Tomorrow, I'm going to hand out my 10-step plan to bring your fallen away Catholic loved ones back to the faith using the three articles that I just read from. And you don't need to say a word. I'll talk more on that tomorrow night. It's a non-passive, non-threatening way for you to get back in the game as a prophet to the nations and let time and the Holy Spirit do the work. I'll explain more tomorrow night. You're going to get three handouts tomorrow night. We're going to need a count of how many are here today. So if you could do that, and then three handouts, two sides each, three different colors of paper if we have it, so that people have some nuggets to carry with them for the rest of their life. Okay. Now, with all that being the case, I'm going to ask you, how many of you can see that indeed you are a prophet to the nations now? I should be doing better than that. Let me ask the question again. Father, get up here with me. No. Do you see my point? Do you understand? How many of you see where you are called to share that? If it's not you, then who? Okay, great. Perfect. Now, let's take a look. Some people might think, I'm not built this way. I can't do this. Oh, yes, you are. Let's look at how God's designed you. Science keeps finding more and more out about the human body, how we're set up. Well, guess what? When they take a picture of you using a special photography called Krillian photography, and they develop the film, all that they see when they develop your picture is light from head to toe. Light. What do you suppose that is? Holy Spirit? Light of Christ within you? I like that one. In fact, quantum physicists are telling us that the body, listen to this, the body is 98% empty, the way that they analyze it and see it in the laboratory. I had ladies come up to me and say, you must be talking about my husband. The fact is this, we can't explain what keeps us going save for the grace of God. That's what keeps us going. So you're filled with light from head to toe. I know what it is. I think you do too. This is my favorite slide because I like music a little bit. How many of you like music? Everybody likes music, different types. How many of you like music and can carry a tune? You can actually sing. Here's where the crowd starts to split a little bit. How many of you like music, like to sing, but either sit or stand next to someone at Mass that can't carry a tune? Make sure they're not here. Okay. Now, here's the fact. Science has found that when they record the inner workings, tape it like a record of the inner workings of our body, our atoms are singing in perfect harmony. That's why you see people that are singing their lungs out at a song on the radio or at Mass, whether they can sing or not, because they feel it on the inside and they want to project it on the outside, whether they're able or not. The ones that know that they're not able, they're a little quieter. And the ones that don't know that, they don't care. Sometimes people choose to sit in a new place at Mass. We all want to balance some of those great inner desires within us out into the world. Let's take a look at our next topic. Some body facts. Our bodies are absolute miracles all on their own, designed by God. Here's a few facts. Your cuts. I just sliced my finger open in Hawaii right before I was to play at Mass, my thumb. I didn't worry about it healing. In this case, it was deep enough. I needed to put a Band-Aid on it. And in a couple days, it was fine. But I didn't have to give it any extra thought. A lot of times, we don't even need to put a Band-Aid on. Your cuts heal themselves without any thought from you. How about when a serious report comes from the doctor? Does that change things? Do you think God's able to heal it? Or do we need to go to the doctor for more help? We have a pharmacy within us. When we cooperate, are healthy, eat healthy, sleep enough, don't worry too much, all that stuff, our body has a tendency to take care of all the things we need for most of us when we're young, through most of our life, even into old age. And when we get into trouble, guess what? We're blessed. It's 2018, we can go to the doctor. He can prescribe a pill, which science has put together, and that helps us get through whatever our need is at that time. Sometimes short term, sometimes long term, sometimes for the rest of our life. But our body produces those drugs that science now can mimic on the outside if we need them. And it happens automatically. Who do you suppose does that? Oh, a more sobering thought. In the average person, every 5 days, they get cancer. Every 5 days, the average person gets cancer. And every 5 days, through the grace of God, it gets washed right out of our system. And we live for another day. We don't even have to think about it. Your body has enough energy in it to run a small industrialized nation for at least a week. What are you doing with that energy? How much of it is spent percentage-wise from 0 to 10, with 10 being, I'm a walking saint, Paul. How much of it is spent in peace and calm and serenity, feeling the presence, the light of Christ within you, your oneness with God? How much of it is spent caught up in the world, caught up in fear, doubt, worry, guilt, anxiety, you name it? A lot of that stuff claims our attention, and it robs us of the peace that God intends. Plenty of energy to redirect. How about the desire to better yourself or to better the church, the parish? God gives you your good desires. You would not give a 3-year-old child on a hot day, and you get more hot days down here than I do up in southern Wisconsin. I'm in the warm part of Wisconsin. All right? But you would not give a young child an ice cream cone on a hot summer day here and watch the child take that first taste and that, you know how it tastes, you know how it feels, and then snatch the cone away and say, you're done. You know you'd have trouble. Well, God doesn't do that to you when he gives you a good desire. He doesn't mock you. He already gives you a way to achieve them, otherwise you wouldn't have it. And your good desires that come from here come with a blueprint for their achievement. The trouble is that because we give into circumstance and thinking less than God-like thoughts, we quit too soon. We give up on some of those goals and some of those dreams and some of those aspirations that are good, that come from God. He gives them to us. Look at this slide. I want you to look at it and remember it the next time you're filled with any type of fear, doubt, or worry. Think about it when you pray, and you might be praying a little too hard and getting tense. It's called a laminin. It's a collection of proteins that form in your body to glue, yes, glue, your cells together. What does it look like? Yet another indication that God is closer to us than our own breath. If you've got a trillion cells in your body, you've got a trillion of these gluing those cells together. It's called a laminin. Given to me the first time I ever did a mission in Gibbsboro, New Jersey, in January of 2010. I went to my hotel room, and there it was with the story in my email. Tomorrow, you'll get where you can Google it and read the story yourself. It's amazing, isn't it? You've got all this great stuff inside you. We're called to use it to practice our faith, to share it with others. But before we move on into the balance of our afternoon, I'm going to share a song with you that you can listen to long after I'm gone. It's called You've Got It All Inside. As you listen to it, it will remind you of this part of the mission. I'm not getting any feedback, am I? I'll leave it on then. Here's how it goes. Sometimes when you are in doubt, you have to stop and sort it out, believing that the answer lies deep within your mind. If it ever seems like it's not there, you can always find it with a prayer, remembering that the love inside is always kind. Set aside your money, can't save you. Throw away your pride, they can't steal it from you ever. When you've got it all inside, you've got it all inside. From your early days when you first began, even before your youth, there has been a part inside of you that always holds the truth. It can take on any question, it can answer any prayer. It responds to your suggestion, all the best of life is there. Set aside your money, throw away your pride, they can't steal it from you ever. When you've got it all inside, you've got it all inside. Freedom comes with wisdom, so I've finally learned. Let me tell you all its secrets so you don't get burned. Ask and it shall be given, seek and you shall find. These are words that are preached to the living, but to their meaning most of us are blind. When you ask, believe that you have received, and it will be yours. When you seek, you'll find that it's in your mind as His love outpours. Set aside your money, throw away your pride, they can't steal it from you ever. When you've got it all inside, and you've got it all inside. And we can remember that for the rest of our days. Jesus said He'd never leave us. He hasn't. He's not only with us at every Mass, but He's all over, even within us, as we've seen in our discussion today. Now is when our mission takes a twist, because I'm going to show you something that's going to divide you in two, more so than your division sitting on either side of the church. You're going to have 3 seconds to look at it, and then we're going to talk about it. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1. How many of you saw God is nowhere up on the screen? How many of you saw God is now here? Let's take a look at it and see what you saw. If you saw God is nowhere, you're right. If you saw God is now here, you're also right. Because it's your perception that caused you to be right. You perceived it, That's what your brain flashed to you. So in your mind, you're right. That's your universe for that second. Now, it doesn't matter what you saw. It's not good or bad. It just is. And there's only one person in all of the thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands I've spoken to that has ever said they've seen anything different. It was my better half, Michelle. She said, Paul, it's up in New Hampshire. She raised her hand. I didn't know she was going to do this. She said, Paul, I see God. I snow here. Isn't that amazing? There's certain things. Wait till I show you tomorrow on what a priest up in New Hampshire said. And I told him, I'm going to share that with people from this time on. Because it's in my mind when I give it. Then I feel better about sharing that. I probably won't tomorrow night and we do a little review. When we perceive something, it's so real to us, we act on it. Or maybe we take no action at all because of what we perceive to be true. Here's another example. How many of you think of yourselves as saints? One, two, three. Anyone else? Oh. Oh, that's fair. You can say saint in training, but not in training camp, because that's the saints. Let's not mix the two. Right, yeah. All right. All right, here's the deal. You can say you're a saint in training. That's fair. But the first reason why most folks don't do it, well, you know what? Again, I'm from up north. I didn't ask the question right. Let me do this. Okay, how many of you want to go to heaven? Okay. Last time I checked, I bet your father will back me up on this. So we'll deacon. When you go to heaven, it says in our catechism that you are a saint. Did you know that? Most people don't think of themselves as a saint because they don't feel they're worthy. They'd feel it would be presumptuous, and that can be sinful. Presumption, one example is, well, I'm going to confession on Saturday, so I'm really going to live it up Friday night since I'm already gone. I'll just get forget. That's presumptuous. Okay? And the other reason why they don't think of themselves as a saint is because they can't imagine a church or a hospital being named after them. Not me, little old me. Fact is this. God doesn't play favorites. He loves us all the same. And just because you think you might not get top billing like St. Maximilian Kolbe, St. Francis of Assisi, or Mother Teresa, doesn't mean you're any less important. Your soul has that same infinite value. So God's designed for you as sainthood. It's great to think about yourself as being a saint because, as we're going to talk about tomorrow night, you become what you think about. You become what you think about. Thinking about yourself as being a saint would cause you to practice our faith, which is perfect. My dad also told me it's the best, the Catholic faith is the best prescription for the sanctification and salvation of your soul. Nothing's better. It would cause you to be what? A saint after you die. It's important that we get our thinking right. There's so many evangelizers out there from other churches that are so exuberant about their faith, and they just think they got it on the Catholic Church because we're not like them in their exuberance. We should be. When they knock on my door, oh my gosh, by the time they leave, they're more pumped up than when they came. And they walk away saying, yeah, I guess I can keep my brochure. That's the way the face I put on the Catholic Church, thanking them for what they do, but saying, why aren't you Catholic? It's a beautiful thing. I get a chance to clear up some misconceptions. The answers are there if we study them. We've got to stick up for what we got. It's gorgeous. Okay. Our perception's important. Now I need to share this with you. Of course, God is everywhere. We believe that. That's why I put him in all four corners. And in this red circle, I put your conscious mind. God gives us our conscious mind, which most of us have pretty full use of for most of our life. Our conscious mind is our reasoning, rational thinking mind. It chooses vigil mass Saturday at 4, or I'm going to come to 11:30 mass on Sunday. It also chooses chocolate or vanilla. The choice is yours. God leads that up to us. He also gives us a very special addition to our mind. In the green box, it says your subconscious mind. This is not understood by most people, yet science tells us that fully 90%+ of our life is lived through our subconscious mind. Tomorrow, in 5 seconds, I will show you, all of you that are 40 and older, you will all respond to a statement I ask you to finish. On cue, on time, say the exact same thing because of what's stored in your subconscious mind from many decades ago. Our subconscious mind is the seat of our habits and our habitual thinking. So if you're a perpetual worrier, insomniac, it's lodged in your subconscious mind. And it goes round and round and round and causes you to do this, do that. Why? Because you already have. And when you see somebody who's hypnotized act something out, they're doing it because the knowledge of how to do it is stored in their deeper mind. In Scripture, this was spoken of often. Remember when they were told to go home by another way? Because it wasn't safe? Consciously, we get so messed up in our thinking and chasing around that sometimes God has to give us answers in our sleep or through intuition. That's where it comes from. That mind is quiet. It looks for suggestions. And the best example I can give is the movie The Titanic. The captain, the conscious mind, saw the iceberg. He radioed down below the ship so that they could fill those stoves, ovens, boilers, whatever they're called, to get up enough steam to hopefully miss that iceberg. The captain was likened to the conscious mind, and all the workers underneath carried it out. The subconscious mind does the work when we make a decision. It causes my muscles to move automatically when I decide to go from here to here. This is going to lead us into tomorrow night, and I'm going to leave you with two scripture verses. The first one is from Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 and 20. It says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But instead, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal." That's in our deeper spiritual self. This is a tremendous tool that God gives us to find His peace, His direction. It's, in some ways, some authors say, connected to our soul. Another verse that's very important, and you need to understand this when you understand the workings of our conscious and subconscious mind. It's from James chapter 1, verses 4 through 8. "Let perseverance finish its work in you, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like the wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do." When this gives instructions to this, this carries it out. If I say to my deeper mind, "I want to walk over there," it gets me there. "Oh no, I changed my mind. I want to go back here." Same thing with our prayers. "I believe that God is answering my prayer. I'm peaceful." "Oh no, I'm worried, I'm doubtful, I'm fearful." When you have those thoughts, this instantly gives you the feeling, peace or dread. And we're going to go into that tomorrow in light of Scripture, verses, and stories to help you free up and experience more of the power, presence, and the peace of Christ within you so that we can be more effective in our own spiritual lives, more effective in evangelizing our faith and building our parish. So here's it. Our next to last slide of the day. Your perception is your reality because you act on what you think is true. But your perception is not necessarily God's reality for you. Big difference, oftentimes. Our goal is to bridge that chasm and fulfill His purposes for us. You know, you've heard it before. There's two ways to live a life: as though nothing is a miracle, or as though everything is. Just a few announcements before we end our session this afternoon. First of all, the CDs that I have very uplifting music, words to edify, help you lift up your spirit. It will actually call up the mission as we've done it. That's what the power of music. Think back to a high school song that you hear today. It evokes the same emotion from way back when. Those prayer cards that I prayed off of. There's one for each day of the week and an anecdote on the back for spiritual living. You won't believe the stories that people have shared from around the country as they use them to move their thoughts away from fear, doubt, worry, and anxiety. Anxiety used to be a big deal for me. And they don't feel that way because they practice those, and it changes the mechanism, the habitual thinking, calls up more spiritual thoughts. And I've got some coffee mugs back there. Nobody needs another coffee mug. If you don't have room in the cupboard, I suggest you break one on purpose. They have that laminate on there that I showed you, and it says, God is now here. At home, and sometimes even on the road, at home, I look at that every morning. I don't listen to any news 29 out of 30 days in the morning. All I do is stare at my coffee mug to put myself in the right disposition. If schedule allows, of course, I go to Mass. So that is a great tool that you can use. And on the back of it, it says, thank you, Lord. Thank you for giving to me so many blessings. Those are affirmative thoughts that change the way you think. The way you act changes your perception. I'll talk more on that tomorrow. We're also going to have a reception after over in the parish center. So if you want to come and pick up any CDs or coffee mugs or prayer cards, I'm way in the back in the vestibule. And then we're going to gather after we're done there with a little from refreshments in the parish center. And if this is your last session, if you're not going to be here tomorrow, there is a free will offering basket in the middle of church that goes to the parish to help offset the cost of bringing me in. This is my day job. This is what I do full time. And this is about the 11th parish mission I've given this year already. So your offerings will go to help make sure the parish can handle this little blip in the budget to keep bringing in people for missions for times to come. Okay, your right hand, please, over your heart. We're going to say some declarations, and then you're going to help me sing our final song. I'm going to say these declarations, and then we're going to say them together. Is that a good deal? I believe Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. I believe Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. I believe in the infinite value of the Mass. I believe in the infinite value of the Mass. I believe God is present within me, helping me at all times. I believe God is present within me, helping me at all times. I am a prophet to the nations. I am a prophet to the nations. I have important knowledge to share. Important knowledge. And finally, the last declaration is an easy one. It is simply two words. I believe. I believe. Oops, I forgot one thing. On the screen, I'm going to put up the refrain to the song that you heard at Mass, at communion time. You can help me sing it when we get there. You've heard it already, most of you. You'll be able to pick it up easily. It was written in Essex Junction, Vermont, May 31st, 2009. It was the beginning and finished in Barrie, Vermont, November 4th, that same year, after I saw people walking to communion over 2,000 years after Christ died and then rose for us. I can feel your presence. I can feel your loving power in the gift of this communion, in this holy hour. Jesus, will you heal me of my iniquity? This I ask of you, 'cause I believe. I believe. I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. A little louder. I believe. I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. Our world appears so lost, Lord, so defiled in sin, that when I come to you to pray, where do I begin? Jesus, change the landscape of everything I see, and help me let it start here within me. Ready? I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. I believe. I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. Oh Lord, I am so blessed. I am the happiest soul, as I confess. Jesus, I need you to live, 'cause you've got so much love to give. Are you ready to really sing it? I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. I believe. I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. God, my Father in heaven, thank you for your Son. As I put my faith in you, I know the battle's won. Father, bring me closer to what you want from me, and let me say again that I believe. Our loudest yet. I believe. I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. I believe. I believe in you. I know the story's true. Yes, Jesus, I believe. I'll take it from here. And I can feel the Holy Spirit now. I feel that light of Christ right now. I feel the Holy Spirit now, 'cause I believe. Doesn't it feel good to say that? Okay. Our final prayer for the day, and then I'll walk back to my little department in the back of church, and then we'll have our refreshments together. It's called Wednesday's Prayer. And it goes like this. Blessed am I, for I am healed now. Blessed are my eyes, for they are the eyes of God. Blessed are my ears, for they are the ears of God. Blessed are my hands, for they are the hands of God. Blessed are my feet, for they are the feet of God. Blessed is my heart, for it beats with the love of God. Blessed are my lungs, for they breathe the breath of God. Blessed is my body, for it is alive with the life of God. Blessed is my mind, for it is filled with the intelligence of God. Blessed is my spirit, for it is quickened with the power of God. Blessed am I in body, for I am one with God's life. Blessed am I in spirit, for I am one with God's power. Blessed am I, for I am healed now. And from Isaiah we hear, he who blesses himself in the land shall bless himself by the God of truth. Thanks for coming. We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30, tomorrow night, for experiencing the light of Christ.